This is the Authentic Entrepreneurs Podcast with your host, Nick Foley and Stu Saunders.
Here we go. This is what I got to say.
Hey. Welcome to the Authentic Entrepreneurs. My name is Stu Saunders.
I am Nick Foley.
And today we're listening to some simple minds, because sometimes, Nick, we have been referred to as having simple minds.
By a lot of people.
We're not too deep, apparently, sometimes people say. But you know what? People won't forget about us.
Yes, fair enough. That's a good point. They didn't forget about the simple minds, so.
Yeah, and this song today comes from the movie Breakfast Club.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Great movie. And I picked it because, well, Breakfast Club, I missed you this morning. You weren't here this morning.
Nope, I wasn't. I got caught up in traffic, you know, 3.5 hour drive on a no traffic day, and today was a traffic day, so it
I
turned
feel like
to
you
4.5 hours.
Having breakfast at Chorus, probably, and just enjoying yourself.
Yeah, I went and got a coffee, and I was like, you got this this interview coming up, pal? I'm just going to take my time.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you coming in today.
Yeah, well.
I really enjoy you taking the 4 hours to get here.
4.5, but yeah, I'm happy to be here, man. Happy to be here now. Sorry, I missed the meat of it.
Yeah, well, that's what we did. We had a great conversation today. I had a great conversation today with Michael Bungay Stanier. Do you know, here's something interesting. You didn't know this, and I'll tell you. He actually took his wife's name.
Really?
Yeah, so it's Michael Stanier, and he actually took his wife's name. So now he's Michael Bungay Stanier.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
good for him.
And so, or MBS, as he likes to be called. So I had a great chat with him, and here's a bit of a bio on Michael, so we get right to the conversation that I had with him, I hope you enjoy it. So Michael is at the forefront of shaping new organizations around the world, making being coached like an essential leadership competency. His book, The Coaching Habit, is the best-selling coaching book of this century, with over 700,000 copies sold and over 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Cool. In 2019, he was named the number one thought leader in coaching by Thinkers50, the so-called Oscars of management. Michael's also the first Canadian Coach of the Year and has been named a global coaching guru since 2014. And on top of all that, he's a Rhodes Scholar. He is the founder and former CEO of Box of Crayons, which is a force for management excellence and leadership capabilities, helping shift organizational cultures from advice-led to curiosity-driven, and in doing so, enabling people to better have better performance. Box of Crayons clients are global, and you can learn more about Michael and Box of Crayons at boxofcrayons.com. So, it was a great interview, Nick. I know you wanted to be here for it. And his book, which you can see on the screen if you're on YouTube's, which is The Coaching Habit, Say Less, Ask More, and Change the Way You Lead Forever. Outstanding guy. We talk about habits. We talk about the myths of habits. We talk about mistakes that entrepreneurs make. And we also talk a lot about what he brings to organizations and what you should bring to your organization, no matter how big or how small. So without further ado, please enjoy this solo interview I did with the one and only MBS. It was wide-ranging, there was some great humor, and tons of value. So enjoy the conversation. All right, we're so pumped. Well, I'm so pumped right now. Of course, Nick's not here right now. He's stuck in traffic coming through Toronto, as I mentioned earlier. But I'm super pumped to have Michael Bungay Stanier here with us on The Authentic Entrepreneurs. Michael, before we even start, I want you to say for me and for our audience how to properly say your name. I know you go by MBS, but how do you properly say your name?
That's a really good question. So when I got married, I took my wife's name. I used to be Michael Stanier. And then I got married. My son and I combined our names, so we become Bungay Stanier. It is it's a name that only invites chaos with it. I mean, I love it. But I literally got a letter once addressed to Professor Michael Banging Spaniel, which was wrong on so many levels. So much so that I've named a new company that I've set up, the Banging Spaniel Corporation. Haven't got a logo for that yet because I'm not quite sure where to go with it. But
yeah, that's open. That's open there. So I'm super excited to have you here today and spend some time with you. You know, one thing we do with each one of our podcast guests is we kind of ask the question at the beginning is kind of your origin story. How did you get to where you are today? Where did it start? Where's that Marvel movies origin story for you?
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's such a good question. And, you know, I have a thing about speakers that when they get introduced, what you hear is about their epic climb to success and how it seemed to go from step one to step two to step three. Whereas I do think for most people, their origin story is a certain amount of just stumbling around in the dark, bumping into things, and then somehow emerging into the light going, I don't know how exactly I got here, but somehow I'm here. But, you know, the focus of my work to you is to help people stay more curious, be more coach-like. And I do that through the company Box of Crayons, which is mostly around corporate training and some books and other bits and pieces. So how did I get interested in that? Well, probably the most earliest seed of like why it's good to ask a question came from my mum at the age of 13, where I was going out in some sort of school dance. And I'm like, I went to a boy school. I don't know about girls. So and she's like, just ask questions. Because if they're talking, they think you're really interesting. I'm like, that's smart. Now, did I meet any girls that night? No, or for about the next 10 years. But it was a good tactic to have in my back pocket. And then as a teenager, I actually found myself in the back of, or on the front seat of a car, often talking to a friend of mine about their angst-filled love life. And I was good at listening. And even as I listened to their kind of troubles and woes, because, you know, every teenager's troubles and woes are kind of heightened, you know, the flame is built up. I was like, I'm good at listening, but I don't know what I'm doing here. So when I went to university, I joined a youth crisis counseling phone line. So, you know, kids thinking about suicide and other stuff. And that taught me some of the basics of asking questions and listening and being present. And I did that through university and finished university in Australia, went to university in England, finally left university. And when I was in England, I noticed the rise of this thing called coaching from California. I was like, well, okay, I live in England now, so we're skeptical about everything. And we're particularly skeptical about things from California. So we're like, I don't know what this is. But I kept my eye on it. And in fact, when my company sent me from London to Boston to help set up an office in Boston, I hired my first coach. Because I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'll give it a try and see what it's like. And honestly, it wasn't a great coaching experience, but it was enough to make me go, you know, there's something interesting here. There's something worth digging into. So I did my coach training. By this time I'd moved to Toronto. I started Box of Crayons. When I started Box of Crayons, it was very much a do anything you can to earn money because you don't know how to earn money. So I had I did a bunch of consulting. I tried to write books. I built a coaching practice. Weirdly enough, discovered I didn't love having a coaching practice. It was too much coaching. So broke down my coaching practice, focused on teaching coaching skills to people. And you know, in the last 3 or 4 years, have had this little surge of success because of a book I wrote called The Coaching Habit, which has sold a bunch and has kind of propelled me a little further into the limelight and the company, into working with bigger companies and the like.
Now, it's funny you should say that you got a coach when you came to Boston, but you didn't like it. I know you said that less than 1 in 4 people like their coaches or get anything out of their coaches.
Well, that's particularly within the context of organizational life, where people who, you know, because organizations are like, coaching is a thing. And somebody's persuaded somebody to pay money to have coach training happen. So now everybody's obliged to coach, which creates its own resistance. But yeah, the statistics are depressing about how successful it is within organizational life. And that's part of what fuels Box of Crayons' work, which is we can do better than that. We have a more useful way of thinking about coaching, a better way of training coaching, a better way of trying to change people's behavior. So we're trying to nudge that statistic around so it's not quite as dismal.
Right. And one thing you talk a lot about also is that ability to train to conversation is a big piece. And you have the 7 questions that you talk about in your book.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you run through those real quick, if possible? Well, I know it's a big piece of the book, but can you...
All right, I'll summarize my entire book in just really quickly in 3 minutes.
Ready?
Thanks a lot.
Go.
Actually, what's funny is occasionally, I mean, I have lots of really lovely reviews on Amazon, but the one-star reviews tend to go, this could have been a magazine article. Why did I pay 10 bucks for this? I'm like, oh man, come on. But anyway, here's the heart of it. And it's actually not the seven questions. The heart of the coaching habit is less the coaching and more the habit piece, which is how do you change your behavior? And the first chapter of the book is about, let's talk about what we know about building habits, because it's hard to change your behavior. And, you know, there's a bunch of good stuff out there that I've built on. There's Charles Duhigg, which is The Power of Habit, BJ Fogg, his website's Tiny Habits, and he's got a new book coming out the end of 2019 called Tiny Habits. And, you know, I've got that on pre-order because that's going to be really good. You know, James Clear with Atomic Habits. There's a thing about habits in the air. But the first thing you need to know about, what behavior change are you trying to achieve here? And it boils down to this simple but difficult statement. Can you stay curious a little bit longer? Can you rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly?
Okay.
Because the truth is that for most of us, we are advice giving maniacs. I mean, we love it. As soon as we get into a conversation with somebody, we're kind of there. We're like, oh, right. I don't really know you. You're talking about a complex human interaction with people I don't know, about facts I don't understand and haven't heard of all of them. But after about 10 seconds, you're like, I think I've got some ideas about what you should be doing here. And there's a place for advice giving, obviously. But it is the fact that it becomes our default habit, our default way of behaving, which is like, when in doubt, give advice. When not in doubt, give advice. That's the shift of behavior. Can you stay curious a little bit longer? And the seven questions are a way of helping people stay curious a little bit longer. And you know what that's about is to say, I could have given you a list of 400 questions. In fact, earlier versions of the book had lists of 400 questions, and they were terrible, terrible versions of a book, because then you just have a list of questions you can't use. And then went, so what's the way of giving people just the right amount of questions? So I played around with it for quite a long time. It's like, is it 5? Is it 9? Is it 13? Is it 313? And came down to these 7 questions. And basically I said to myself, look, I reckon with these 7 questions, that gives you enough to be more coach-like more of the time. And so it's proven so far with the feedback we've had and the book sales that we've had.
Well, yeah, I mean, your book's a huge success. My thing is, we talk about entrepreneurship a lot, obviously, in this podcast. And
yep.
With the rise of entrepreneurship in society, I mean, it's huge now. I mean, everyone's an entrepreneur. And everyone's a life coach, too. I was actually at an event this past weekend, and the Archangel Summit, I went to go see our friend, my friend Todd Herman, and your friend, soon-to-be Epic faculty member with. I was blown away. I would meet people. I say, so what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm a life coach.
Yeah,
I thought we all are, aren't we? We're all life coaches, I guess.
Well, there's a couple of things I react to around that. The first is we kind of all are life coaches in the sense that, you know, it's pretty easy to go do a bit of training or just hang out a shingle going, hey, look, I'm a coach. And it's a profession that really draws people because it's a helping profession. People are like, I can actually help people have better lives. And that's a noble calling. That said, there's you know, to be blunt, there's a lot of mediocre coaches out there, not just life coaches, but coaches in general, because the barrier to entry is so low. And there's a thinker who I love, a guy called Peter Block. He was kind of had his heyday in the 80s and 90s. And he wrote a blurb for the very first book I ever wrote, which is honestly one of the high points of my life. You know, Peter Block liked something I wrote. It's like Mozart going, that's a pretty good piece of music. I'm like, yes, nailed it. And the thing he wrote, I've held really close to kind of my heart in this, because it in some ways drives the work that I do, which he says, coaching isn't a profession, but it's a way of being with each other.
Mm.
And a big part of what I'm trying to do is just make coaching, or as I put it, being more coach-like, which makes it sound a bit less weird, just an everyday way of behaving between everyday people. You know, this is good for parents and kids. This is good for friends. This is good for sports coaches and their teams. This is good for a boss and their team. You know, this commitment to a behavior, which is, can you stay curious a little bit longer? Can you rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly? Works universally.
Staying curious means, I guess, not being a know-it-all as well, right? Not being a...
Yeah.
You know, I knew everything.
One of our clients is Microsoft, which is thrilling. And Satya Nadella, who's the CEO, who's been responsible for really driving a significant culture change. He says, look, we're trying to shift our culture from a know-it-all culture to a learn-it-all culture. Because know-it-all, they're deluded.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Not only do you not know it all, your advice and your opinions and your facts are actually much worse than you think they are.
Yeah.
So being a know-it-all is not a strength these days.
So young entrepreneurs getting into the business, that's a lot of our audience is people who are just trying to start out, you know.
Yeah.
What are the coaching things that you would tell young entrepreneurs? What would you tell a young entrepreneur getting into a business? Like, what would you suggest that they do in terms of what you do?
Well, I would, if you want to make a connection to the questions in the book, I think there are three questions in particular that can be really helpful for entrepreneurs. And I'm an entrepreneur myself. Like, I started my company and lead my company. So I have some empathy with the pain and struggle and ups and downs of what it means to be an entrepreneur. The first is the question number three in the book, which is the focus question. And the focus question is, what's the real challenge here for you? What's the real challenge here for you? And the discipline of the entrepreneur to not react to the first thing that comes along, not fight the first fire that they think they see, but to pause and go, so what's the real challenge here for me? What am I looking to solve? What's my struggle in this? Allows you to bring a deeper awareness about what the thing is that really needs to be fixed. Because as an entrepreneur, odds are that you're short on time and money and resources and patience. And you do not have time to kind of flap around, or do not have time to go, I spend a lot of time today solving the wrong problems. So that discipline to go, so what's the real challenge here for you, I think is one discipline that's helpful for an entrepreneur. The second question I'd offer up is question number six, which is the strategic question. And this, you know, this is good for entrepreneurs. It's good for anybody in business, really. And this question goes like this. If you're going to say yes to this, what must you say no to?
Mm.
And again, it comes back to these entrepreneurs going, look, I don't have, you know, endless time, money, resources, etc. What choices am I going to make? And what strategy is in the end is deciding what to say no to, particularly deciding to say no to the stuff you kind of want to say yes to. Because as an entrepreneur, everything's a possibility and everything feels like it's interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jim Collins, the good to great guy, in one of his other books has like a great metaphor, which he says, look, part of what strategy is he says, firing bullets and firing cannonballs. You fire bullets, the cheap, inexpensive experiments to kind of figure out where the real target is. But then when you figure out where the target is, you fire the cannonball, you commit. And he argues that in most business people, entrepreneurs and otherwise, they don't fire enough bullets, and then they're not courageous enough to commit with the cannonball.
Wow.
But that question, what are you going to say yes to? And if you're going to say yes to this, what must you say no to? Really brings it brings the consequences of choice to the front. And it makes clear the opportunity cost that you're making or from that decision, which is really helpful to understand as an entrepreneur.
You know, entrepreneurs are always, go ahead.
Go on, Steve.
No, the entrepreneurs are always about go, go, fast, fast, fast. Do you have to coach them to slow down? Do you suggest that? Or speed over, like, you know, focus, but speed over?
Yeah, I mean, there's speed and there's haste. And there is a hyped up piece around speed. And, you know, you listen to Reid Hoffman and kind of, it's all about blitzkrieging. It's all about go as fast and as big as you can. And I think it depends on what type of entrepreneur you want to be and what type of culture you want to create and what type of values you have and what opportunities are there in the marketplace that you're serving. I don't think speed for the sake of speed is particularly interesting. I mean, just my own personal bias is like, our goal at Box of Crayons at the moment happens to be we're trying to create a calm company. And calm doesn't mean non-responsive or non-reactive. It just means we don't try not to run around with our head on fire going, it's a panic, everybody panic, because we all die if that happens. It's just not sustainable.
Right.
So I think there's a insight around patience, because there's a value to being patient. There's an insight to actually letting things stay ambiguous a little bit longer. And there's an insight around, if you're going to commit, commit. You know, there's a great quote from Napoleon, which says, look, if you're going to take Rome, take Rome. Fire a cannonball.
You know? Right. Now, you talk about habits as being key. What are the two or three or four, five or 10 or 16? We haven't got time for 16, but what are the few habits you see are most important in a successful entrepreneur? Are there ones that are synonymous with entrepreneurship?
I don't know if there's a generic habit that you go, this is just the best one for me. I would take the Leo Babauta approach, which he wrote Zen Habits. The book is called Zen Habits. The website, which I haven't looked at for years, is zenhabits.net, I think. Anyway, look up Zen Habits. At one stage, it was one of the biggest websites in the world. Leo is just a delightful guy and has written really thoughtfully about habit building and about his own life transformation. And his point is, look, you can only build really one good habit at a time. So figure out which habit is going to serve you best. And who knows what habit's going to serve the people watching and listening to this podcast best. I mean, it could be giving up smoking. It could be taking up running. It could be meditating. It could be journaling. It could be communicating in a different way to people on your team. I mean, there's 1,000 habits that can move things forward. You know, if you look at Vern Harnish's book, Scaling Up, and the assorted disciplines that he suggests to take you from a small company to a medium-sized company, and the Rockefeller habits around the meeting rhythm, these are all good habits. You just can't do all of them all at once, because then you fail. So the real question is the domino habit. If I do this thing, how many good things will it affect downstream? So how do I be more efficient in terms of the habit that I choose?
Right. I think a lot of people are looking for the hack habits. You know, there's all those great articles you read on LinkedIn and they're out there saying the five habits of the most successful billionaires in the world, or the six habits of the, and you do these five habits, get up at 5 a.m., jump into cold water, only eat things on the right side of a tree, whatever those are.
They probably all work. The question is, do they work for you?
Right.
There's a degree to which you can spend your whole life trying to hack and optimize your life and therefore not get around to doing any of the actual work.
Right. Well, do you think there's changes in habit creation? I mean, there's a 21 days, there's a 66 days, now there's 100 days. Are you seeing any newest, what's the newest, trends and research in habit creation that you're seeing?
Most of it is based just around our ongoing understanding of how the brain works. And, and I wouldn't claim to be a scientist who's an expert around habits. I read a lot around it, so I'm a translator more than an originator. But I don't think a whole lot changes. It's like, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, Charles Duhigg, in describing the habit loop, goes, look, three parts to a habit. There's the trigger, understanding the thing that sets you off. That's the context. There's the behavior, how you react to the trigger. And there's the reward, why your brain goes, you should do that again next time. And once you understand that, you then understand why people, like Nir Eyal's got a new book out called, his first book was called Hooked, which is almost a kind of, here's how you build things that build habit. His next book has just come out called Indistractable, which is around, okay, now you're addicted. Here's how you get unaddicted to devices. James Clear is really clear in his book where he goes, I'm taking Duhigg's model and I'm showing you how to turn that into assorted good habits. So I think the basic mechanics are right. There's clarity about what's true or not. The 21 days to a habit is just not true. Its origin is actually in the world of plastic surgery, where a plastic surgeon realized it took people about 3 weeks to get used to a new nose after they'd had a nose job. And there's a way that that got then extrapolated into it takes 3 weeks to build a habit.
And that got to, I heard 66 days, now there's a 100-day thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the research that says it's about 66 days, but I think it just depends on the person and the habit, right? There's one thing to build a habit to floss. That may not take you 66 days. It may take you less. It's another thing to build a habit to meditate, perhaps, which is harder. So I just don't think there's a hit 66 days and you're golden. I think there's a, you know, James Clear in his book goes, look, it's actually not a days thing. It's a repetitions thing.
I agree.
The more you do it, the more it becomes a habit.
Yeah.
So it's do it a lot.
It's the consistency of it over time.
The Authentic Entrepreneurs are brought to you by.
Hey, it's Stu Saunders from the Epic Community and the Authentic Entrepreneurs. I just want to jump on here real quick and let you know that this May 2020, we're running the Epic Community event again. It was such a success last year and an incredible return ratio, 100%. But don't take my word for it. Listen to what those who were there, listen to how they feel about it.
My brain and my heart are so full.
It has soul.
And I think this is the start of something very special.
It's been real.
You won't be disappointed.
Blown away.
Absolutely flawless.
Perfect.
You know that you're just around like the most amazing humans.
Great experience, great people, great minds, great discussion. One might say, this is epic.
That is just a sampling of what people thought about the Epic Community. So do yourself a favor, go to theepiccommunity.com, apply to be a member, and join us this May, 24th to the 27th in Toronto, Ontario.
It's time for 5 Big Questions with Nick and Stu.
Here we go. So what is one thing you're learning or reading at this moment?
So I am, so Box of Crayons, corporate company, we're focused on B2B sales. And we've worked pretty hard to lessen my profile and make it about Box of Crayons rather than about Michael.
Right.
3 months ago, I handed over the CEO-ship of Box of Crayons to Shannon. So she's now running the company. So I'm kind of finding my new path. And we've decided we're going to try and make Michael a little bit more famous. So I'm plunging kind of in more deeply into the world of thought leaders to figure out what about that, you know, horrifies me.
Right.
What about it doesn't horrify me? And how do I show up in that world in a way that feels like I won't lose my soul?
Oh, I love it. Okay, who is one of the biggest influences or influencers that has been any part of your journey?
There are people who have just been influences by the people because they're active and present in my life. So Marcella, my wife of 25 years, she's played a part. You know, my dad in particular, my parents in general as role models, but my dad in particular has played a part. But in terms of thinking, it's often people like Peter Block. It's kind of contrarian thinkers. So Peter Block is a contrarian. Seth Godin is a contrarian. They're just people who I like going, you've helped me maintain the flame around going, look, don't accept the status quo because it's probably substandard.
Right.
What's the bigger, bolder, more courageous thing that you can strive for?
Love it. Have you ever had a failure early on in your career that at the time you thought was a huge failure and was end of the world stuff and then it turned out to be really good or moved you forward?
No, I've never failed at anything ever.
You're the one.
I am just a flawless human being.
You're the one I read about.
I don't know what you really understand the question. I mean, here's a story that's kind of connected to a failure. So I'm a Rhodes Scholar, which is a kind of, in some circles, that's a big deal. It means that I left Australia and went to study at Oxford, and Rhodes Scholars are, you know, sometimes framed as, you know, the ruling elite of the world and blah, blah, blah. So I applied for a Rhodes Scholarship in my fourth year. I spent 6 years at university in Australia. My fourth year, I was like, okay, I'm going to be a Rhodes Scholar. Yeah. So I go in and get the paperwork, and the woman goes, and I go, how does the process work? She goes, well, yeah, everybody fills out the application. Everybody gets a first round interview. Then they narrow it down and they take you to the sort of short list and other stuff happens. I'm like, cool. So I fill it out, I write my blurb, send it in, and I get a letter back going, sorry, you don't even get the first round interview. I was like, oh, God. She said everybody got a first round interview. So how much do I suck at that? But what it did was make me go, does this matter? Is it worth coming back and giving it another go? And 2 years later, I went back, had a better application, and kind of made it through. Honestly, my life is full of kind of bumping into moments of rejections. I mean, The Coaching Habit is a self-published book. And I spent 3 years trying to get my previous publisher to publish it. And they just didn't get it, didn't like it. They liked it, but they didn't love it. They just wanted me to completely change it, rewrite it. And yeah. I was like, okay, I failed at pitching this. What does that teach me? And it took me into self-publishing, which turned out to be a very good thing.
Obviously, what you're talking about is, it, you know, resonates with people because your books are huge, massive successes.
Yeah, it's true, but it doesn't. But in some ways, like, what's deceptive about those stories is, look, I failed, and then I did something else, and I succeeded.
Sure.
And there's a bunch of stories where I failed, and then I just stopped.
Yeah.
Or I failed, and I tried something else, and it failed again.
Yeah.
You know, that you've always, whenever you're listening to a podcast or anything like this, you've just got to be aware of the survivor bias, which is, this is what Michael did and it worked, therefore this works.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the question you've got to be asking yourself is, even if this doesn't work, is this still worth pursuing?
That's a great question.
And those various other things, I chose to go, yeah, I think it's worth pursuing. I'm happy to fail again because I'd like to give it another shot.
Which is putting in more time to figure it out.
Yeah.
You're coming to Epic in May in 2020 with an amazing group of people. What are you?
I'm like the ugly B-list speaker because everybody else is amazing.
No,
so thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm excited. What are you going to bring to the crew at Epic? What are you going to bring? Because you have a couple hours with these people. So what are you going to do with them?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure yet, Stu. I'm still playing around with it. I mean, I have a new book coming out February 29th. Next 2020. So I'm playing around with going, how do I teach some of the stuff that's in there, which is a deeper look at what does it take to change your behavior to move so that you can take on the, in the book I talk about the difference between easy change and hard change. And we know how to do easy change. We struggle with hard change. And I try and deconstruct that. So I could do something around taking on hard change. It's quite a profound, deep, fast thing. We could talk about coaching and how to be more coach-like and actually give people the practical experience of what does it mean to actually stay curious a little bit longer. So I think you and I need to sit down and talk about it, but I've got some really good ideas.
I love it. I'm excited. I can't wait till May. Okay, so we do a random question now. It's just a random complete question. We punch it into our random question generator. You can't hear it, but there's a computer running right now in the background.
I can see. It's huge flashing lights.
Massive.
Very old school.
Yeah, it's like from Lost in Space. It's really old. Question is, today it comes from, if you could be any superhero, this comes from Mikey, our producer, any superhero in the world, who would you be and what superhero power would you have? If you could create one or be one.
Yeah, that's really good. I would like to be Danger Mouse.
You are dating yourself with Danger Mouse.
Oh, but it's so good. It's just like one of the best cartoons ever. And I don't even know. I don't even know what Danger Mouse's superheroes are. Superpowers are. I just know that he's this epically cool mouse. /superhero/spy. It's kind of like James Bond, right? He's James Bond and a mouse, the frog villain, the Italian crows side henchman. So good. So I'm not sure, you know, what are Danger Mouse's superpowers? Maybe persistence, sense of humor. I think irony. That's his real superpower is irony.
Maybe we should reboot that and you can star in it. In a live action version of it. Michael, thank you so much for hanging out with us,
My pleasure.
I know Nick wanted to be here, but traffic is, as you know, in Toronto, sometimes bad.
I never liked Nick. I mean, no. Honestly. Dude, I mean, he's dead to me. He's dead.
He's done. Nick is done. How do people get a hold of you?
That's a good question. You know, actually, the most interesting place to go to at the moment is the site for the new book. So that's theadvicetrap.com, theadvicetrap.com. And on various social, I'm starting a new thing. So that's Tame Your Advice Monster. So at Tame Your Advice Monster on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that.
Quick question. Why a box of crayons?
Oh, because I arrived in Toronto, knew nobody, said, right, the way I get to build a network is give talks. So I gave a talk at the local coaching chapter on how to build a brand, because I thought everybody's coaching brands are often terrible, particularly life coaches. Came up with Michael's irresistible and unarguable three lessons about branding, which I can't remember what they are. All I know is that my business name at the time failed all three of my own tests. So I was like, oh dear. So then I just brainstormed a bunch of names. And then when a box of crayons showed up, I just knew that it was a really interesting name. And then when people ask me that question, why box of crayons? I go, well, what do you think of when you think of box of crayons? And people come up with all sorts of things like, you know, play, curiosity, freedom, outside the lines, diversity. And I'm like, exactly, all of that stuff. That's part of what we want to attract with the BOC name.
I love it. That's what I thought actually when I thought about creativity and childlike, you know, that unhinged just creativity is being a child and that the mind so open to things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
People project different things onto the name, but not many people project bad things. Not too many people have had kind of been traumatized by a box of crayons in their early life. So it's generally good.
They're not usually a triggering thing, are they?
Yeah,
except for good stuff. Michael, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And we'll talk before May, but we'll see you in May.
I'm looking forward to a great deal.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. That was a great conversation with MBS, and I'm sorry you missed it, Nick. I really am.
Yeah. It's... sorry I missed it too, but I'm looking forward to hearing it with all the rest of our viewers and listeners when it comes out, whenever that is. I don't want to say next week because I don't even know when next week is.
We don't know when next week is. But I will ask you this question. What do you do for coaching? Do you coach or do you get coached?
I think I don't coach. I mean, my team. I manage my team and try to ask them the right questions. I actually read Michael's book and The Coaching Habit and was able to apply some of the knowledge that the seven questions I have written down in my office, and I try to apply that knowledge. Yeah. I do take online courses that interest me. So right now, as far as being coach goes. I'm taking a course called Idea to Exit from Dan Martell. Now, it's specifically for online companies, and as you know, I have an online company, so I want to learn more about that and how to grow it and continue to scale it. And I also go to events like Epic events, where I'm able to be around, you know, people like Michael Bungay Stainer and others that are part of the faculty, and I get to take lots of notes and learn there, so that I get to look to somebody else for some of the answers that I don't know. So those are two things that I like to do. I like to take online courses. So I try to take maybe one a year, and then I go to Epic, man. And then other than that, it's just audiobooks and books for me. Podcasts.
Michael talked about in the interview about the negative downside of being a know-it-all.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine being one of those.
Yeah, and assuming there's nothing else for you to learn, or you don't need to be coached anymore because you know it all. And that's a real downfall for a lot of entrepreneurs sometimes who think they've got it all figured out and they're 21, you know, and they probably don't have it all figured out. I'm 50 almost, and I don't have it figured out.
Well, and I think there's entrepreneurs in their 40s that say they're too busy to read, they're too busy to learn, they're too busy, and I mean, and that might be part of their brand in some cases, but I don't think there's a person out there that is successful in entrepreneurship or in business in any capacity that hasn't learned from someone or read a book or learned in a podcast or listening. And maybe they're just saying it like that, like, oh, I'm too busy hustling, grinding. And I think that word has many connotations to it now, but I don't have a lot of time for people who don't have a lot of time for learning, because there's no such thing as I don't have enough time. You make the time. If it's a priority, it's time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think it was like, who was it? Unger. What was this? I can't remember his first name. anyway, he's a billionaire investor with what's the richest man in the world? There was his name.
Warren Buffett.
Yeah, Warren Buffett. And he said, you know, he's like, I don't do many different things than anybody else. He's like, take your 5-year plan. He's like, I take my 5-year plan and I just condense it to 6 months. He's like, yeah. I'm just constantly learning, right? And it's just insights like that. Like, I may never be able to do that, but I'll be able to take a little snippet from what I learned from that comment and be like, okay, I can apply this to my life.
You know what I mean? Well, Michael said that, you know, I asked him the question. I said, you know, there's always these articles you read on LinkedIn or, you know, they're on, you know, Inc. or whatever, and they're always like the 7 habits to becoming a billionaire, the 5 habits to being the most successful person. And he said, you know, those habits may have worked for that person. It doesn't mean that the way they do it exactly will work for you.
No, exactly.
And so, you know, you take what you can out of that piece you just said, and, you know, you take what you can use, but not everything you can use or in the same way. And I was talking to you yesterday, I think it was, and I was talking about changing up my morning routines. And I think the comment I made to you was, I'm just trying to find the routine that works best for me.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I put that in this morning. I should have played this morning, and it worked out really well. So maybe I'm onto it. Maybe I'll have to keep tweaking it. You keep tweaking your stuff. I keep tweaking my stuff. And I think that's one thing about a coach, getting coached is, and he talked about in his book too, MBS, is get somebody to be accountable to.
Yeah, and that's one thing we try to do a lot of, and it's interesting. I mean, you have that for your writing and for your health stuff, and then now every Sunday. I mean, we started off doing it with our morning routines, and then now we talk about what we're going to do weekly, right? Yeah, I mean, it's important to have that accountability. And I mean, I like reading these kind of stuff. I like listening to wonderful interviews that we do and that you do and that I do and such, because it's just such great learning. And what it realizes, and what I think a lot of people should understand, is that the people who do things really, really well in life, that are really successful, they're not any different than you or I. They just have a really great cadence of existence, and mm-hmm. they're consistent and they're congruent in their message, so mm-hmm. they live what they say and they do it consistently, yeah. right? And I mean the fact that you and I had that conversation not too long ago, you're like, I'm trying to revamp my morning routine, just suggests to me that it's like, okay, at least the good thing is that you're not just going to be like, well, this is it, this is the only way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like Tim Ferriss does it best when he says, he's like, I'm constantly, and you know this as well as I do, like he's constantly trying to you know, I wouldn't say life hack ways, but like make himself better, try new things, try different drinks, get up yep. different routines. And he was talking, he's like, I have a morning routine, and if I can do, and he said this in Tribe of Tools of Titans. He said, if I can do 30% of what I want to do on a consistent basis in the morning, then I'm off to a fantastic day. Yeah. And that blew my mind, because I was like, oh,
30%,
that's it? I'm like,
seems like too small.
But exactly, you're right? Yeah. But it's just like, but I do it consistently.
And, but you know, the thing is, too, I mean, we should wrap this up, but people do less than 2% of what they really
should
do.
Oh, absolutely, right? Yeah, no question.
Right? So 30% is pretty awesome. Yeah. Anyway, it was a great conversation. I'm sorry you missed it, but you're going to have to listen to it like everybody else in the world.
I do. Exactly.
And you can listen to it if you want, Nick.
I will. I always do.
On
anywhere you can get podcasts. So on
iTunes,
YouTube, Spotify, anywhere. YouTube, you can see our gorgeous faces. But if you're traveling, we would suggest not to use YouTube. But if you are at home, use YouTube.
Yeah, or Spotify.
Or
Anchor or whatever's out there.
Whatever you want. Wherever you can get podcasts, you can get us.
Yeah, and if you're listening, hit the subscribe button and share it with people who find it valuable. I think that what we're trying to do is create a community that has lots of great information, resources, and you know, you can feel once a week you can come back to us and we'll
try to get you some more knowledge.
Yeah,
that's it, right?
Keep us together.
All right, learners.
Well, until next time, don't forget to keep being
authentic.
Peace out.
Thank you for listening to The Authentic Entrepreneurs. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Until next time, keep being authentic.